on the Colorado State Sports Network, powered by Canvas Credit Union. From Learfield IMG College, this is the Colorado State Insider with the voice of the Rams, Brian Roth.
All right, we welcome everybody back, and it's another edition of the Colorado State Insider Podcast presented by The Group. Thank you for joining us once again here this week, and well, we're going to preview a college football game. At least we hope we're going to preview a college football game. Yeah, it looks like the Rams season is going to start coming up on Thursday night as the Rams get set to take on the Fresno State Bulldogs. But of course, sitting here a week ago, recording this podcast at about the same time I'm recording this podcast here today, I thought we were going to have a game against New Mexico, and of course that thing got canceled and kind of threw a wrench into my Tuesday of last week. I had to completely redo the podcast from a preview of the New Mexico game to really an obituary of the New Mexico game. But we're back. We're hoping we're going to have college football coming up on Thursday night in Fresno, and we hope it'll be the debut of head coach Steve Addazio's tenure at Colorado State. All right, wait, listen, we're going to talk a whole heck of a lot of football on the podcast here this week. Last night, we had the Coors Light Steve Addazio Coaches Show at the CBN Potts Tap Room and Restaurant out at Collindale, Kevin Cheesley's place. Of course, Kevin, a former Colorado State football player, took over the CBN Potts name, but you know, brand new menu over there, and boy, really a fun time, and a pretty good crowd that showed up on a cold and snowy Monday night, but had the McBride brothers as our student-athlete guests at the show last night, and great to catch up with Toby, of course, the fifth-year senior defensive lineman, and of course, his younger brother, Trey, who's the junior tight end, who turned all sorts of heads last year at the tight end spot, and in my opinion, is one of the best tight ends in college football, and he's on that Mackey Award watch list for top tight ends in the nation. So I'm going to replay each of those interviews from the McBride brothers from last night. Then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to preview the Fresno State Bulldogs. And we always like to do that with the voice of their team. And we'll bring in the voice of the Fresno State Bulldogs, Paul Loeffler, to the program. And Fresno State coming into this contest on Thursday night, 0-1 after a 34-19 setback at home to Hawaii last Saturday night. So we'll get Paul's thoughts about the ball club. They're under a first-year head coach, just as Colorado State is. Kalen DeBoer comes over from Indiana, was the offensive coordinator at Indiana now in his first season with the Fresno State Bulldogs. So those are the guests we're going to have on the show here today. Now, you look back to last week. I mean, what a crazy week it was last week for Colorado State Ram football. And again, we thought it was going to be the season opener. New Mexico slated to come to town. And then on Tuesday, that game gets sidelined because of some COVID issues down there in the county where Albuquerque is. And basically, it came down to this. I mean, the governor and the government down there in New Mexico were not allowing the Lobos to practice because of limitations on how many people could get together. I think the limit was 5 down there. I mean, it was something ridiculous. Even though New Mexico was testing 3 days a week per Mountain West Conference guidelines, the governor didn't budge and said, still can't practice. And also, the team would have had to quarantine for 14 days since they had left the state. They would have come to Colorado. And when they came back, because of the guidelines, they would have had to quarantine for 14 days, which, of course, is just quite simply put unrealistic. And so the game gets canceled. But the University of the Mountain West Conference, I guess, kept banging away at the governor and the government down there in New Mexico, because here this week, San Jose State was supposed to play in Albuquerque against New Mexico. That game, it was announced on Monday, has been moved to San Jose. So they're not letting San Jose State come in to play New Mexico, but this time the governor of New Mexico said you can go for a road trip. What changed between last week and this week? They wouldn't let them come to Colorado, but they'll let them go to California. I think probably just a lot of pressure from the university and some of the fans down there in Albuquerque. Hey, college football fans vote as well. And so New Mexico will play their season opener here this week in San Jose in a game that was originally scheduled to be played in Albuquerque. So a really weird week last week. And I thought one of the interesting things that Steve Addazio talked about last week on Wednesday, he mentioned that when the game was canceled last Tuesday with New Mexico, he and his staff and a little bit with Joe Barker and the athletic administration started working the phones trying to find a replacement game for New Mexico, trying to find a replacement opponent. I mean, think about that. On a Tuesday, you're looking for a college football opponent to be played just 4 days later. I mean, that is something that would only happen in the COVID era of 2020. And in the end, Colorado State just wasn't able to make that happen. I mean, if they had a couple more days, possibly you were going to be able to find an opponent. But 4 days to get an opponent, that was probably unrealistic. But I'll tell you this. I do like the attitude that Coach Steve Addazio and the athletic administration had with that, saying, look, we had a game scheduled this weekend. It gets canceled. We're trying to find another opponent. And it should also be said, it didn't have to be a real game. I mean, Steve Addazio said they reached out to Colorado to see if the Buffaloes wanted to scrimmage, do a full live scrimmage with officials. Obviously, it would have been closed to the public. There wouldn't have been any radio broadcast, but it would have gotten Colorado State some live game action. But I like the attitude by Steve Addazio and that coaching staff to say, hey, look, we just want to play football. And if New Mexico can't come up from Albuquerque to play us, well, then we'll go try to find somebody else to play. So the game gets canceled. And, you know, interesting note, saw in the game notes from Kyle Neves and his great staff over there at Colorado State, the Rams game against New Mexico canceled. It was the first time that Colorado State has had a canceled game since 1942. That's a long time ago. So I went to my trusty Aggies to Rams book written by John Hearn. I have it right by my desk all the time during the college football season. It's a terrific book. Aggies to Rams, if you don't have it, you should order it. Go to aggiestorams.com. I know the CSU Rams bookstore has it as well. Aggies to Rams, the history of football at Colorado State University. And John takes it all the way back to 1893. So when I saw that note, I said, well, let me go and look. Obviously, World War II had something to do with it, right? If it was 1942. And so I got out Aggies to Rams, and I looked it up, and indeed, the game against Wyoming got canceled that year because of World War II. Now, in fact, Colorado State back then was known as Colorado State College of A&M. How about this? I mean, you know, we think we have it rough again with this pandemic. And if you heard the podcast a few weeks ago, we talked about the Spanish flu and the pandemic back in 1918 and how Colorado State and other colleges struggled to get through that football season because not only was there a pandemic going on worldwide, but there was also a world war. World War I was going on back then. And of course, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have the technology, the connectivity that we all have, even though a lot of us, you know, again, we're locked down back in April, even into May. But think about it back in 1917. I mean, that's a whole nother animal, and you have a world war. And you think about the game canceled in 1942. I mean, there's no world war going on right now, all right? And the pandemic sucks. It is about as inconvenient in every possible way. But when you start comparing it to other times in history, look, we're going to be all right. We can all get through this with our internet, our computers, our phones, our technology. But the game that was canceled back in 1942, Colorado State canceled the game against Wyoming. And then CSU did not play football in 1943 and 1944. I had no idea. But again, that's why I go to Aggies to Rams. It's such a great resource to have. CSU canceled the football season in 1943 and 1944 due to World War II. Now, other schools within the region did play. The University of Denver, which still had a football program back then, they continued to play. Colorado continued to play. UNC, that was called Colorado State College for Teachers, I think it was what it was called back then. They canceled one of their seasons. I think they canceled in 1943. So, you know, it's interesting. We're going to get hopefully seven games this year for Colorado State football. But back in the early 1940s with World War II going on, Colorado State had to cancel games in 1942 and then did not play a season of college football in 1943 and 1944. So I thought that was an interesting fact as I went back and looked that up in Aggies to Rams. Also, it should be noted that 1942 was the first season in 31 years where Harry Hughes was not the head coach. Hughes, earlier that year in April, had moved to the athletics director position, and Hans Wagner took over the program, who had been a longtime assistant coach to Harry Hughes. But again, Harry Hughes was the head coach for Colorado State for 31 years. 1910 to 1941, and 1942 was the first season that he was not the head coach. So another interesting fact, again, you can only find in places like Aggies to Rams, the book by John Hearn. Also, the great John Mosley, one of the most influential and greatest athletes in Colorado State history. Of course, a member of the Tuskegee Airmen. They had that John Mosley Leadership Academy at Colorado State. Now, of course, John passed away back in 2015, but John Mosley was also a senior in that 1942 season. So some interesting tidbits to come about from that little note from Kyle Neves and the staff of the communications department at CSU. All right, a couple more things I wanted to point out to you before we get to the interviews with the McBrides, and then, of course, our preview of Fresno State with their voice, Paul Loeffler. NCAA Diversity Week here this week, and I had a chance to speak to a couple of Colorado State student-athletes here this week for that, and we did some of our Ram Country conversations that you can see across social media, and talked to them about their thoughts and experiences, stories about being a minority student-athlete in collegiate athletics these days, and I thought it was really, really interesting. Tori Williams, a women's basketball player at Colorado State, she's a junior. Really good conversation with her. And then David Agray. I imagine a lot of Ram football fans don't know who David Agray is. He's a sophomore running back for CSU. Hasn't really seen the field in his first 2 years. His first year he redshirted. Second year he did not play as a redshirt freshman last year. And could see the field here this year. I mean, who knows? I mean, David was a kid that might have a chance to see the field this year. He was originally from the Bronx, moved out to Colorado and when he was in high school and finished up his high school career at Rangeview High School in Aurora. But I invite you to check those interviews out on CSU Rams Twitter and Facebook pages. Two very well-spoken student-athletes at Colorado State, and I found those conversations with them to be really interesting and really thought-provoking, and just to hear some of the experiences that they have had and gone through. All right, one final thing, and this was fun, I got to admit. Just this morning, I was able to finally catch up with Martin Laird. Of course, most of you probably know who Martin Laird is, but if you don't, Martin Laird, former golfer at Colorado State, was a two-time All-American at CSU. He's in the Colorado State Hall of Fame, was inducted back in 2017, but he played golf back in the early 2000s. Well, he's been on the PGA Tour, he's been playing pro golf for the last 14 years, and just 3 weeks ago, he won the Shriners Children's Open down in Las Vegas, a PGA Tour event. Kind of a shaky coming down the stretch, ended up going into a playoff and ended up taking it down. It was his first win on tour in 7 years. It was his fourth win overall in the PGA Tour, and had a chance to catch up with Martin here this morning. And I'll get that on the podcast coming up next week. But Martin, again, he's from Scotland, came over to Colorado State, had never been to the United States until he stepped foot on the Colorado State campus. That was the first time he had come to the United States. He was a 17-year-old teenager. Jamie Burnwell, the former golf coach at Colorado State, recruited him to come out here. And, well, the rest is kind of history. And he's been living for a long time down in Scottsdale, but he and his wife this past May just moved back to Denver. And so Martin Laird back in Colorado. His wife was originally from Steamboat Springs. And it was just really fun to catch up with Martin and talk a little bit about golf. If you're a golf fan, you'll want to tune in next week. I was talking to him about some of the young players this day and age. Of course, Martin now, as he said, look, I'm an old guy. And again, he graduated college from 2004. So, I mean, what has Martin got to be? 37, right? I guess that's old on the PGA Tour these days. And talked about some of the up-and-coming young players and what it's like to try to fend them off and keep winning when you get into your upper 30s. But again, that will come up on the podcast next week. So tune in for Martin Laird. All right, well, let's get to football again. The Rams and the Fresno State Bulldogs coming up on Thursday night from Bulldog Stadium in Fresno. It'll be the second straight year that the Rams travel to Fresno. Rams won their last season, 41-31. And, well, it's really, I mean, if you look at the season, Rams go 4-8 last year. That win at Fresno State is right up there, probably the best win of the season, if not one of the two best wins. I think it was the best win of the season last year. Colorado State came out of the gates fast. 69-yard touchdown pass to Trey McBride from Patrick O'Brien on the second play of the game kind of got that thing rolling. CSU was able to get a couple of interceptions from Logan Stewart in that game and able to hold off the Bulldogs 41-31 last year. And so in just a weird scheduling quirk because of COVID and of the shortened Mountain West Conference schedule, CSU is going to be going to Fresno State in back-to-back years after not having been there the previous four seasons. So one of the big guys in that game, as I just mentioned, Trey McBride, had the huge touchdown catch early in that game against Fresno. And here's some of my conversations with the Colorado State tight end last night on the Steve Adazio Show. Let's talk a little bit about this season and watching you last 2 years. And as a freshman 2 years ago in 2018, I remember the big touchdown catch at Florida in the swamp where guys were bouncing off you and you steamrolled into the end zone. And then to what you were able to do last year, 45 catches, all Mountain West Conference. How do you continue that trajectory and make that leap again this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I know the offensive coordinator we have has done a great job. He's putting me in the place to go out and make plays, and that's all I got to do is just make the play when it's thrown to me. I'm not asking for any more than that. Just when the ball's thrown to me, I got to make the play, and that's the reason. That's how I'm going to be able to be successful is when it's thrown to me. Just make the play.
Well, you look at the weapons, and I know a lot of people were looking at this Ram offense coming back and saying, "Boy, you got perhaps the two best catchers, pass catchers in the Mountain West Conference with Warren Jackson and then, of course, you. Warren obviously is pursuing his professional career now with the Mountain West kind of flip-flopping. Yeah. Do you feel maybe a little added pressure now knowing that, you were going to be the guy that I know a lot of folks are expecting to kind of carry the load?
Yeah, no, not at all. I feel we have plenty good receivers. There's a lot of great guys on our team that will go out and make plays. Nate Craig Myers, Dante Wright, EJ Scott, those are all, guys that are going to go out and make the play when the ball's thrown to them. So I know that when their number's called, they're going to be ready to go, and I don't feel any more pressure than I need to.
You're obviously a very good pass-catching tight end, but I know we've talked about it in certain circles about you being an aggressive dude, and you're a very good blocker as well. I mean, talk about that, the dynamics of being a tight end, because, yeah, you want to help the offense and be out there catching touchdowns and be Travis Kelce, but you also know that you're a big part of the run game and establishing a physical front.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that you got to take pride in is run blocking. And I've always been taught that, if you do a good job in the run game, you're going to get rewarded, in the pass game. So that's kind of the way I look at it, is if you're successful in the run game, then that's when, the play action passes open up, and then that's when you can be successful in the pass game.
All right, Trey McBride continuing to join us here tonight from CBN Potts Collindale, the tight end for Colorado State. You mentioned the new offensive system. Tell us a little bit about it. How much does it differ from what you guys were doing in the past? And you mentioned Joey Lynch. I mean, this is a guy who comes from Ball State who his offense is put up a lot of points over the last few years.
Yeah, it's something I'm super excited about. We run a really fast tempo offense, and that's something that you got to take pride in, is just getting up, getting ready, getting lined up, and just trying to, out-effort your opponent. We get taught that, the tempo doesn't, effort, I mean, it's really all it is effort. So you just got to go out there, play as fast as you can, execute at a high level, and just go out and make plays when the ball comes to you.
When you were deciding where to go to college, you had several Pac-12 offers. And then, of course, you had Colorado State. You decided to stay home to go to Colorado State. I'm curious if the name Joel Dreesen had anything to do with that.
Yeah, no, Joel has been a huge part of everything. He's a great guy to bounce ideas off, great guy to talk to.
Do you guys talk a lot?
Yeah, we do talk a lot. Even to this day, I still text him. He actually texted me the other day asking how football's going. So he's a guy I talk to, a lot. And he's a guy that I really look up to and a guy that's going to shoot me straight. And, he obviously knew where he wanted me to go, but he wasn't a huge factor at all. He just said, do what your heart tells you, and that's exactly what I did.
I mean, you look at this, Trey, because based on last year, and then if you have a nice year here this year and maybe even the year after that, I mean, you can look at two of the great tight ends in Colorado State football, and two of them can come from Fort Morgan. I mean, yeah. How many people live in Fort Morgan? Like, what, 8,000, 10,000?
Something like that, yeah. So, I mean, that's something that's really cool. And he's paved the path, and yeah. I just got to, live up to the expectation of Colorado State tight ends.
Okay, well, you get Fresno State coming up on Thursday night. We talked about with your brother Toby that we were there last year. It's a rare instance where you go to the same place two consecutive years. But I know you have fond memories of that game last year. You had a big play. What, second play of the game for CSU?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a great call. I mean, the defense just kind of left me wide open, and it really wasn't more than that. I mean, I caught the ball and ran, and I was wide open. It was just missed coverage, but great play, and I'm super excited to go back there. I'm really excited.
Yeah, again, second play of the game, 69 yards. Trey takes it in for the touchdown for a 7-0 lead for the Rams. CSU would go on to beat Fresno State last year, 41-31, hoping for the same outcome here this year. But there'll be no fans. Have you thought about what it might be like going into stadiums this year and knowing you might have to manufacture your own energy?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's just something that – I mean, it's just like practice, really. It's just practicing against different people, and we're going to bring the energy. We're going to be excited when we make plays. We're going to be jumping around, and I think that'll be enough energy to get us through the game and get us a win.
Well, looking forward to seeing you run wild in that secondary on Thursday night.
Yeah,
Trey,
absolutely.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, that's Trey McBride, the 6'4", 260-pounder out of Fort Morgan, and yeah, you figured he still keeps in touch with Joel Dreesen, and certainly yeah, he said he did. 45 catches last year, 560 yards and 4 touchdowns. So, hey, listen, I think we're going to get another big season out of Trey McBride here this season. I know it's a new offensive system, Joey Lynch, the new offensive coordinator, but the fact of the matter is this: CSU is going to find any way possible to get the football in the hands of big number 85. All right, his brother was there too, Toby McBride. Toby, the fifth-year senior, also, of course, out of Fort Morgan. It was 6'3", 290. Toby's part of a defensive line that is really experienced for Colorado State this year. I mean, you look at the Colorado State defense, and the tip of the spear is that defensive line. There's a lot of guys that have played a lot of college football. Talk to Toby a little bit about that. Toby, also a terrific wrestler in high school. I always like to ask him wrestling questions as well. And then we talk about his health, because last year at about this time into November, Toby was on the sideline due to injuries and said that he was giving up football, wasn't going to come back even though he had more eligibility. His body was just kind of at the end of the road. But Steve Addazio gets the job back in December, and one of the first trips he made was to Fort Morgan to talk to both Trey McBride and Toby McBride, and he was able to talk Toby McBride to coming back out. And boy, I know Ram fans are going to be really excited to have 97 in the green and gold here once again this year. So, once again, from the Steve Addazio Show last night at CBN Potts, here's my conversation with defensive tackle, the nose guard, Toby McBride. I remember you as a freshman. You came in, and defensive line played right away. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I found a way. The defensive line coach let me in. He kind of eased me in there a little bit, where he didn't play me much the first game. But as the season went on, I ended up playing more and more.
So you and I were talking off the air before we came back, and I remember last year, I mean, you've had some medical issues and some history with that. Mm-hmm. And you said you weren't going to play any more football. I know we had talked to your mom in one of the final games and said it was sad that she's not going to see 97 out there in the green and gold anymore. But, well, here we are. We're talking to you as a member of the Colorado State Rams. So take us through that journey of thinking maybe my career might be over, but now it's not over. We still have a lot to go.
Yeah, I was ready to sign the medically retiring paperwork. I wasn't going to take any of my red shirts, and I was just going to call it a career. But lo and behold, Coach Addazio comes knocking on the door, talks to me, said he wants me to play for him, and we kind of talked about how he would manage me and make sure I could make it through the year. So we had a good, healthy conversation about that, and after that, I was fired up to play for him.
So did Coach come out to Fort Morgan then?
Yeah, he did.
Out to the eastern plains there of Colorado.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously you've had some back issues, some other issues. What does your work week look like then with Coach Addazio and the coaching staff now that is going to allow you to go out there and give full go on a Saturday or as it is this week, a Thursday?
Yeah, I just do normal practices just like everyone else, but when it comes to team reps, I'm held out a little bit more than the other guys, where I'm only taking two reps a rack instead of a full four or five. It's kind of just putting me on a pitch count, so I'm not hurting my back because once after so many reps, my back kind of just locks up and I can't play as well. So with his management plan, it's been fantastic and something I haven't experienced before where I can just play 100% for full practice or full week and then hopefully a full game. So
did it feel good to kind of, you know, again, you thought you might be leaving the sport of football, but boy, to get back and to strap on that helmet last spring when you guys were at spring workouts. I mean, how good did that feel to know, you know what, there's another chapter or two left on this story?
Yeah, it's awesome. I never wanted to leave football, so to be able to have the opportunity to come back and play 100% how I want to and healthy is just something that I've wanted since I've been here. So to be able to actually do it this year has been everything I've wanted.
All right, Toby McBride joining us, a senior defensive tackle from Fort Morgan, Colorado, here on the Steve Adazio Show. Tell me about the new defensive scheme here. Obviously, a new defensive coordinator, Chuck Keeter. That guy knows a lot about football, as you know. Tell me about the new defensive scheme and how you see yourself fitting into it.
I'm still playing nose guard, but our new coach kind of changed the mentality of the defensive line as a front, where we're more penetrating, attacking front instead of kind of just getting your gap. So by doing just that simple change, our D-line has just been so much more explosive and kind of take the reins off, let us make plays how we want. So the D-line alone has been able to impose our will more than we've been able to in the past.
What was it in the past? Kind of wait and react? What was the difference there?
It was more moving around, getting to gaps and kind of confusing the offense, not knowing where the blitz is coming from, where now it's, you know, just beat your man, get to your gap, and make plays, you know, be a baller.
We've talked about the experience you guys have on the defensive line because you're coming back, and you've been here for 5 years. You look at guys like Ellison Hubbard, Devin Phillips has been here now for his third season, Manny Jones. I mean, you've got a lot of guys on the defensive line that have played a lot of Division I college football.
Yeah, and so our inside guys are stacked, and Coach Smith's been jumping through the moon with how stacked we are in the inside, and then on the outside with our defensive ends, we've got two guys that came in, and they're already making an immediate impact with us and kind of making plays on the edge. So it's a completely different D-line. We kind of moved some guys around. Manny's on the inside now, but it's for the better, and we're ready to make some plays this year.
Yeah, tell us about some of those new guys. I know one of the defensive ends, Scott Patchen, coming over from the University of Miami, a grad transfer.
Yeah, great guy. He's playing defensive end now, and he's great rushing the passer. He can collapse the pocket. Great. And then Brandon Rooks on the other side can do the same thing. He's got some crazy shiftiness. He can bend like no other. Nothing like I've ever seen. So it's great to have these guys both on our team now. So we're ready to attack some fronts.
Yeah, you have been waiting a long time to kind of get back on the field. We talked about the journey. What goes through a player's mind when Coach Adazio or however you guys found out last Tuesday that, hey, we're not playing New Mexico this Saturday? Man, I'm sure the disappointment among the guys in that locker room was palpable, but what was it like to hear that?
Yeah, it just felt like it was another adversity put in front of us. So it's kind of how we've been handling it is kind of control what you can control. So just taking it day by day, you don't know what the next day is going to bring. So just do everything you can today. And then when that game was canceled, it was obviously heartbreaking, but we were ready to get on to the next because that's who we wanted to play next, so we're ready to go.
All right, so you're going to Fresno. CSU was at Fresno last year, and forgive me, did you play in that game? I forget where it fell in the season. You were still playing because I know you missed time at the end of last season with injury. To go back to Bulldog Stadium 2 years in a row, I know it's going to be different with no fans, but tell us a little bit about what you expect for a road game here against Fresno State Thursday.
Yeah, they're a great opponent. We're getting game plan ready, but at the end of the day, we're expecting to go 1-0. That's our goal, and that's what we expect to do is find a way to win and be 1-0 when we're getting on that bus.
All right, final question here tonight for Toby McBride. You were a three-time state champion in the sport of wrestling in high school. I know you're an All-American wrestler in high school. And I always used to ask the question in the past couple of years, who's the best wrestler on the team, right? I ask about basketball and other stuff. And it was always Adam Prentice, who's no longer with the team, and you. Adam Prentice, gone. So anybody in that locker room can challenge you on the mat?
No, we were actually talking about getting a wrestling mat put in there kind of so we can wrestle around, teach some guys some moves, because really it'd help a lineman, defensive lineman, right? both sides of the ball. So it'd be good in there, but – As of right now, I don't think there's anyone that could take me, but we did get a good wrestler with Aaron. He's our Sam now.
Okay.
And he was a good wrestler where he's from. So, and you can tell how he plays is he's just a strong freshman.
Yeah, but wrestling's got to help you in football, in the trenches, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know how to use your leverage, kind of get under a guy, and don't let him push you around so much.
Yeah, and sometimes when you're at home, you got to take down little brother, huh?
Yeah, once in a while.
You and Trey ever get on the mat?
Not.
He was more of a basketball guy, though, wasn't he?
But he still likes to, test it out a little bit. So we've had our few goes, but not so much anymore.
Well, I like it. Toby, excited to see you back here this season. I know Ram fans as well, and I can guarantee you, Coach Adazio and Chuck Heater and that coaching staff are excited as well. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, there's Toby McBride, and really, really fun time to catch up with both Toby and Trey last night at the Steve Adazio Coaches Show. And, I was talking to Coach last night, and, of course, when he came over from Boston College, everybody was talking about how he called guys dudes, and these guys are dudes. And what's a dude? A dude that can just flat-out play football. And as Steve said last night, these two guys from Fort Morgan, they are definitely dudes, and anybody that's seen them play obviously would have to agree with that. Okay, we're going to shift gears, and to wrap up the show and the podcast here this week, let's preview the game coming up on Thursday night, Colorado State and Fresno State. It'll be an 8 p.m. Mountain kickoff from Bulldog Stadium. All of our coverage on the Colorado State Radio Network will begin at 6 p.m. with the Tailgate Show. Marty Cesario will handle that, and then we'll get the game going at 8 p.m. I'll be on the call along with former Colorado State quarterback and athletic director Mark Driscoll. Looking forward to it. I mean, just to get behind the mic from my standpoint, looking forward to that, but just looking forward to watching Colorado State get out on the field for the first time in seemingly forever. So counting down the minutes and the hours till tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Mountain Time. All right, well, it's a Fresno State team that has a new head coach, and Jeff Tedford was there for a handful of years and really did a nice job of turning around that Fresno State program. Under Tim DeRuiter, it all of a sudden went in the tank, and well, they got rid of him, and they got the former Cal coach to come over. He was a Fresno State guy and did a great job, but Jeff Tedford decided at the end of last season to step down due to health reasons. So Fresno State, another one of those schools in the Mountain West. Again, six of the 12 schools in the Mountain West all have new head coaches, and Kalen DeBoer is the new head coach at Fresno State. Spent last year as the offensive coordinator at Indiana. The previous 2 years, though, before that, he was at Fresno State under Jeff Tedford as the offensive coordinator. Now, we're going to talk to Paul Loeffler in a moment, but Paul has an interesting story on how Jeff Tedford was able to find Kalen DeBoer. One other fact about the new head coach for Fresno State, he was an NAIA coach for a while at Sioux Falls. Now, Sioux Falls is NAIA. It's a NAIA school up in South Dakota, and it's the alma mater of Kalen DeBoer. But in his time there at Sioux Falls, Kalen DeBoer as the head coach went 67-3 as the head coach of Sioux Falls and won three NAIA national championships. I mean, he had as many national championships as he did losses in his time at Sioux Falls. Now, I get it. It's not Alabama. It's not the SEC. I understand that. But if you go 67-3 anywhere in any league, it could be JV football, I don't care, you're doing something right, and that is impressive. And he was able to do that at the NAIA level. All right, we mentioned these two teams met up last year. I thought it was one of the best wins of the season for the Rams. CSU won that game 41-31, and the Rams have had the number of the Bulldogs. Now, the schedule has kind of helped the Rams out in that aspect, because when Jeff Tedford kind of had this program rolling for a couple of years, Colorado State did not see Fresno State because of the cross-division aspect of the Mountain West Conference scheduling. But Rams have owned them a little bit. Six of the last seven meetings have all gone to Colorado State. The last loss for CSU came back on October the 6th, 2012, when Derek Carr was the quarterback of the Bulldogs. They came into Fort Collins and won 28-7. We mentioned the first game of the year last Saturday. I watched most of that. I had to do it over my phone. It was the Hawaii broadcast. But watching that game on the phone while I had some of the other Mountain West Conference games up on the big screen. But, boy, Hawaii looked good. Hawaii beat Fresno State 34-19. And of course, you know, Hawaii went to the Mountain West Conference Championship game last year, and they have a new head coach. Todd Graham is now the head coach there at Hawaii, but Rainbow Warriors looked really good, and they outgained Fresno State 552-409, and this was the number that kind of surprised me, was that Hawaii had 323 rushing yards in that game. I mean, you think of Hawaii, and you think of Norm Chow, you think of course, Nick Rolovich, the previous coach. Of course, you think of June Jones from way back in the day for Hawaii, but you just think of Hawaii as a team that just chucks the ball all over the yard, and they still do throw it, but boy, did they run the football effectively against the Bulldogs. 53 rushing attempts for Hawaii in the game at Fresno on Saturday night. 323 rushing yards. And a lot of the damage was done from that quarterback position. Again, Hawaii wins that 34-19. Fresno State had four turnovers in the contest. Hawaii did anything they wanted on third down, converting on 69% of their third downs. And that's a Hawaii team, I think, that's going to surprise a few teams here this year. But I know it was a Fresno State team that was disappointed that that's the way that they opened up the season. But sloppy football for Fresno, I think, was to be expected. And they've really been in a different situation than just about every other Mountain West school has been in. We mentioned not only do they have the new head coach, they have been in a different situation than just about every other Mountain West Conference school. Now, we mentioned the new head coach, okay, so you have the coaching turnover there. Fresno State did not have spring football by the time the pandemic hit, so they had zero spring football. And when the pandemic hit, obviously all the students went home, student-athletes went home to do online learning. And the student athletes at Fresno State did not come back until late September. They weren't back for off-season workouts. They weren't back for voluntary workouts. So it was a football team that basically had to start from scratch with a brand new coaching staff and had about 3.5 weeks to get ready for that season opener against Hawaii. So I think we all expected Fresno State to be a little sloppy and maybe not to play their best, but you know, in this contest, they looked pretty good in the first half. It was the second half that kind of they started running out of gas, which was strange. But this is a Fresno State team that has had a lot of obstacles to overcome, and you figure they're going to be better in week number two against Colorado State on Thursday night than they were in that first game against Hawaii. Now, they have a new quarterback, Jake Haener. He's a transfer from Washington. He was named the starter 5 days before the opener, so just about this time last Monday of last week. Sat out last year due to NCAA transfer rules and only played 4 games at Washington, but was a 4-star recruit coming out of Danville, California, just east of Oakland there, and is a junior, and won the starting quarterback job here in fall camp. So Haener's the quarterback. Their running back is really, really good. Ronnie Rivers, he's been there forever, seemingly. Rivers led the Mountain West Conference in touchdowns with 16 last year, and he's going to be a load for Colorado State. And then they have a pretty good wide receiving core. They had 9 different guys catch a ball in the game against Hawaii last week. And then the defense, 4-2-5. I don't know how good that defense is. They didn't look great against Hawaii, and we'll see. They had to replace a lot of guys, including their top 3 tacklers from a season ago. So that's a snapshot of what the Rams are going to be facing coming up at Bulldog Stadium in Fresno on Thursday night. And, well, don't take it from me. Let's take it from somebody that's had boots on the ground there in the San Joaquin Valley. Of course, that would be the voice of the Fresno State Bulldogs, Paul Leffler, as we were able to sit down earlier this week to preview the upcoming matchup. All right, Paul, thanks for taking a couple minutes out of your schedule to join us. Obviously, Fresno State coming off a season-opening loss to Hawaii 34-19 on Saturday night. I want to get to the game in a second, but first off, tell me what the experience was like broadcasting a game at a stadium with no fans, and what some of the players and coaches spoke to you about, if you've talked to them about playing in an atmosphere where there are no fans, because this is new to absolutely everybody.
It is, and it's so surreal. And I think the changes that are brought about by that reality, we're probably going to be realizing gradually over the course of the year. The one that became pretty evident for me just in this first game is, you know, we've all grown up knowing there is such a thing as a home field advantage. And when you have a crowd in place, it's going to be difficult for that visiting team to win, especially situationally. When it's a critical third down, you know the home crowd is going to make a lot of noise. When it gets to the fourth quarter and the game's on the line, you know the home crowd is going to be a factor. And I think the absence of a crowd has actually flipped that advantage maybe to the visitors. Even if it isn't a palpable advantage, you know it's the vacuum of the advantage that used to exist. So I think you're emboldened as a visiting team now in these road environments. So it's going to be a different sport really this year without fans. As far as calling the game, it was surreal to look around a 40,000 seat stadium and see nobody except some cutouts in the north end zone. And as far as the players and coaches, they've said it isn't that big a deal. But you know, on some level, you know, there is a fuel that they receive from a crowd that they're just not going to get. So they prepared for that. They came up with this acronym, BYOJ, bring your own juice. And they did look very energetic, but you could see that there was some rust, that this team hadn't had a whole lot of reps in practice, and that some of the execution issues weren't quite nailed down yet.
So were they pumping in crowd noise at the stadium, or did they only do that on the television feed? Was there actual crowd noise though?
They were pumping in some crowd noise. For me, it wasn't the same as a real crowd. I mean, you know, Brian, when you're at a stadium and something big happens, you don't just hear it, you feel it. It like reverberates from your toes to the top of your scalp and you can feel it. And it wasn't that, I'll say that. And it'll be interesting, you know, with all these stadiums doing this, piping in noise, who's the person in control of what noise gets played when, and will it always match the actual situation? So there could be some other surprises in that realm. But yeah, you heard the noise, but it wasn't the same as a stadium full of fans.
Paul, you mentioned a little bit on some of the obstacles Fresno State has faced in preparing for the season, and I'm going to run down kind of an outline of them, but can you go into a little bit more depth for our fans to give an idea of really the eight ball that Fresno State's been behind? Obviously a new head coach, just like Colorado State, but Fresno State did not get any spring practices back in February or March. Obviously the pandemic hit in mid-March, and the team didn't come back in June for off-season workouts like a lot of places did. Colorado State players were back on campus in Fort Collins in June. So essentially you have a new coaching staff that doesn't see their team from mid-March to late September. I mean, that's going to take its toll, isn't it?
It is. And you know what I've been impressed by is Kalen DeBoer's resolve not to allow any of those things to become an excuse or even really to spend too much time talking about them. It's just the hand that they're dealt. And Fresno State's success over the years has come when there is that proverbial chip on the shoulder and there's an underdog mentality that I think this whole valley kind of rallies around. So I think that's how they're channeling it. It's like, hey, maybe we have a taller order than other schools had. Maybe we're at more of a disadvantage in theory, but let's find the things that we can turn into an advantage. Let's make the best of the situation. And you're right. There were absolutely no student athletes for any sport on campus at all from the time COVID hit until after the announcement was made that the Mountain West was going to resume football in the fall. So no off-season workouts, no access to the weight room, no voluntary practices, none of that for any of the sports. And there are some other sports that are still dealing with that while other programs in the conference practice. But really, it's just the reality of the COVID era and where we live and the number of COVID cases that we've had in Fresno County and a decision by the school president to, you know, exercise caution and make sure in his mind that he was doing everything he could to, you know, to preserve the well-being and the health of the student athletes. So I think that they understand that. The players do, the coaches do. It's still hard. You know, they know that they didn't have those opportunities, but now they do. So what I've seen, Brian, is a hunger from this team. When something's taken away from you, you value it a little more when it returns to you. And now that the opportunity and the privilege of playing college football has returned to these Bulldogs, they're really not holding back. And they really appreciate that privilege and they're throwing everything they have into it. And they've said, the coaches have said, they're excited to have a short week and to get right back on the field after what happened on Saturday night.
Tell us a little bit more about Kalen DeBoer. He does have some Fresno ties, was on the coaching staff for a couple of years before last year. He went to Indiana, was the offensive coordinator in Indiana, and then obviously he was hired in the offseason. But tell us who Kalen DeBoer is. Obviously, he's an offensive coach, and he won a ton of games, I know, at Sioux Falls in the NAIA level.
Kalen DeBoer is a special person. And, you know, it's funny, I caught up with Coach Jeff Tedford this last week for our first game, and fans are wondering how he's doing. He had to step down for health reasons. And, you know, those were the first words out of his mouth. Kalen DeBoer is a special person. And he never knew Kalen until he hired him to be his offensive coordinator. And he tells the story that the way that came about was he got the Fresno State job. He looked to put together a staff and he needed an offensive coordinator. And the TV was on and Eastern Michigan was playing in a bowl game. And he said, hey, how did Eastern Michigan get in a bowl game with all the one win seasons and the you know history of really struggling there? And he looked at the numbers and said, boy, this offense really turned a corner. He said, oh, there's the coordinator. And that's how he got to know Kalen and reached out to him and they really hit it off. But you look at his track record, you know, he's from South Dakota, a place called Milbank. He played at Sioux Falls. He was a wide receiver for Sioux Falls and played baseball and even played a little pro baseball after he got done there. But, you know, he went back to his alma mater to coach. He's a head coach in his 30s and goes 67-3 in 5 years, three national championships. He won as many national championships as he lost games. And one of those three losses was in a national championship game. So it's just unheard of stuff. But then, you know, he leaves his alma mater because he says, I'm going to climb the ladder in coaching. And he's an offensive coordinator at the FCS level and, you know, bumps up from there. And he's at Eastern Michigan. He comes to Fresno State for 2 years. They win 22 games, win a Mountain West championship, Indiana for a year and now back. And, you know, he is a guy who's very ego-free. And if I look at his coaching staff, those are the other guys he's surrounded himself with, people whose mission is clear, who prioritize the kids and the program above themselves and their own gratification. And it's really genuine. I mean, the first time you meet the guy, you can see how sincere and genuine he is. And I really believe he's going to be an outstanding head coach. I think that, you know, by the time he's done at Fresno State, there are going to be some other schools that are really interested in him. And I just hope he hasn't even won a game at Fresno State yet as a head coach, but I can already look forward and see this is a guy that the Valley and the Bulldogs are going to want to hold on to for a long time.
Again, Fresno State loses 34-19 to Hawaii last Saturday night. Four turnovers for Fresno State, three of them thrown by the quarterback, Jay Kaner. Now, there was a quarterback battle for Fresno State, and Hayner wins it. He was a transfer from Washington on campus last year, sat out, but seemed like he struggled with turnovers in that first game. Kind of give us a scouting report on Jay Kaner.
Yeah, and similar to the team dynamic of, you know, this isn't a normal year. You haven't had all the preparation. Here's a quarterback who played a little bit at Washington, you know, but never played a game start to finish there. So really, it's the first time since high school that he's playing four quarters of football. And you could see a little bit of that. You know he's amped up. The arm talent is unmistakable. He can really spin it. But the four turnovers were, you know, three picks and a fumble. That was his fumble on a sack fumble. One of the interceptions hit the receiver right in the hands, bounced up off his shoulder pads, and was a deflected pick. Another one was deflected off one defender to another. But I think that is going to be the issue with him. It's the decision-making. It's how greedy do you get? And on one hand, this is a Fresno State offense that I think is going to be more explosive and more vertical in its nature than what we've seen the last couple of years. And Jake brings that dynamic. But if he brings that on every down, you're going to have turnovers. So he's got to learn when to take the safer option. And he will. You know, you can see that. He's a leader. He's a vocal kid. You know, he's got a good rapport with his teammates, was around him last year running the scout team. And you know that he's not looking at that game and allowing it to crush him. He's looking at it as, okay, here are the things that I can polish up, and here's what I need to do against Colorado State to try to even up that record.
Well, Kalen DeBoer, obviously the offensive coordinator for a couple of years at Fresno State, gone last year, has a new offensive coordinator this year, but I'm curious how much of DeBoer's offense are they running, and are some of the holdovers from two years ago, do they have a pretty good grasp on this offense?
Yeah, I think it's still very similar to what he was running here. And the guy operating it, Ryan Grubb, has worked with Kalen for, you know, most of their careers. They were together at most of those stops I told you about that Kalen's had. And he was the offensive line coach when Kalen was the OC here before. Then Ryan stepped into the offensive coordinator role last year under Jeff Tedford. So some of the philosophies, the concepts are similar. But he's still a fairly young coordinator, too. And I respect Kalen DeBoer for delegating and saying, hey, I'm not going to meddle with you. I'm not going to, you know, give you all the answers. I'm going to let you grow and work with a new quarterback and figure it out. And there is some room to grow there. I think there were some situations in that game where they're looking at the film and saying, hey, we could have handled that a little differently. But weapon-wise, Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, has a lot to work with. We just talked about Hayner, but in Ronnie Rivers, they have one of the most, you know, complete package, polished product running backs you're ever going to find. a guy who grew up in the game. His dad was the all-time leading rusher here for a long time. His father in the pros was Barry Sanders' roommate. So when you see Ronnie juking and jiving with the number 20, that's some of the history behind that. He's very elusive. He's an outstanding receiver out of the backfield, which they didn't really take advantage of against Hawaii. But what we did see in the game against Hawaii is he's better than ever in pass protection. For a guy his size, he's only 5'9", and he's, you know, about 190 pounds. He can stonewall a defensive end who's coming off the edge or a blitzing linebacker. He's really good in that part of the game. So if a healthy Ronnie Rivers is there for all eight games, the Bulldogs are going to do really well. They got Jordan Mims back in the backfield, who was explosive for him a couple years ago, missed last year with an injury. And receiver-wise, they're very deep. Even without last year's leading receiver, Zane Pope, who's out with an injury, they have some explosive ability. Jalen Cropper showed it last year. We got a taste of it from a freshman, Josh Kelly, against Hawaii. And even a walk-on, Eric Brooks, was very involved in the passing game. So there's no shortage of offensive weapons. The tight end has been a big piece of Kalen DeBoer's offenses over the years. And in this game, Juan Rodriguez caught his first career touchdown. So I think when you look at Fresno State offensively, from a defensive perspective, it's kind of a pick-your-poison situation. There are a lot of ways the Dogs can hurt you.
I think Ronnie Rivers is one of the top two, three running backs in the entire Mountain West Conference. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball. Defense, and what was the expectation coming into the season for this defensive unit? Obviously, there's a new defensive coordinator. But the stat that I really think stuck out to me from the game on Saturday night, Paul, was the rushing yards for Hawaii. You think of Hawaii, now I know Hawaii is under new leadership with Todd Graham, but think of Hawaii slinging the ball over the yard. Well, they ran for over 300 yards on Saturday night against that Bulldog defense.
They did, and a lot of that was the quarterback, Cordero, who had 116, and that's, you know, with his sack yards reduced from that, that's a huge concern. And in the game against the Rams last year at Bulldog Stadium, you know, as much as they're concerned about Warren Jackson outside, it was McElroy in the middle that pounded them over and over again. So I think the run defense is a huge concern. In the offseason, I think people were concerned whether or not they could generate a pass rush. But they showed that in the first quarter. I mean, Kwame Jones, a senior defensive end, had three sacks in the first quarter alone against Hawaii and missed a good chunk of the game because of conditioning issues. He was cramping up, another byproduct of this bizarre 2020 year that we're all dealing with. But it is a new scheme as well. So Fresno State has shifted to a 4-2-5 alignment. Not the only school in the league that does that, obviously, but the first time Fresno State has done that. William Inge is the defensive coordinator. He played for Hayden Fry at Iowa. He's a real charismatic guy. Coached Khalil Mack at Buffalo and has coached a lot of places, including Indiana with Coach DeBoer last year. And there's going to be some adjustments that need to be made. You know, their base package has some talented players. Some of them are healing up from injuries. And a couple of those situations were complicated by the timing of everything. They had one of their starters who decided to have surgery since the season wouldn't start till the spring, and then they moved the season back up to the fall. So now he's still rehabbing that and trying to play into shape. But I think there is enough talent there. I think what the Hawaii game exposed was a need to be able to adjust to a big physical package on the other side. Hawaii had a package they employed a few times with seven offensive linemen in a real wildcat situation. And Fresno State, out of that 4-2-5 front, didn't have a change-up package to counter that. So Hawaii really imposed its will in those situations. And I'm sure, knowing Coach Addazio's brand of football and the way his teams have been so physical over the years, they're looking at that and thinking they can exploit something in Fresno State's defense. So the onus is on Coach Inge and the Bulldogs to come up with an answer for that approach.
Yeah, I know the Fresno State defense also without Justin Rice, one of the top defenders really in the Mountain West Conference last year, leading tackler for Fresno State. When Mountain West Conference decided to cancel football, I know he transferred out, so there's another big piece of that Bulldog defense that's missing here this year. All right, Paul, we'll let you run on this. What kind of a jump do you expect the Bulldogs to make from week one to week two? And you look at some of the advantages for Colorado State, extra practice time. You get game film on Fresno State with all their personnel. They're rested. But the advantages for Fresno State, they have a game underneath their belt with a new coaching staff. However, they have the short week, so there's kind of some advantages on each side. But what kind of jump do you expect the Bulldogs to make from week one to week two?
Well, I know the coaches are hoping it's a significant jump. And there's reason to believe that could occur when you consider how little time they've had together. You know that normally in a 12-week season, you want to see that progress week to week. Well, if you're only playing 8 weeks, does that mean you need to see more progress between week one and week two? A short week at that? You'd hope so, but it's going to be really interesting to see. I can't tell you that Coach DeBoer's buzzword this week for the team is execution. You know, the team had a chance to win that game against Hawaii, a couple red zone turnovers, a couple drives that finished with field goals instead of touchdowns. It really hurt the cost, but there were some good things. There were some really big plays in the special teams. You know, they pinned Hawaii down at the one. They forced a fumble on a kick return by the Rainbow Warriors. So you're seeing the potential, but you didn't see the consistent execution in all three phases of the game from the start of the first quarter to the end of the fourth quarter. That's every coach's dream. And I think we will see Fresno State get a little closer to that on Thursday night. But I would say the biggest advantage the Rams have is just the element of surprise with that new coaching staff. You know, the Bulldogs are really flying blind as to what the Rams are going to do. They may know some of the personnel, and they're glad, just as the Rams might be glad Justin Rice, the defensive player of the year preseason, isn't there. They're glad Warren Jackson, the offensive preseason player of the year, isn't there. But they don't know what else the Rams have. So that element of surprise could be big early in this game. And how do both teams adjust after the cat's out of the bag?
Well, I know I'm really looking forward to getting back to work. You got a game under your belt on the broadcast side. Congratulations. I was envious of all my Mountain West Conference brethren on Saturday night. So we're looking forward to getting out to Fresno, Paul. Looking forward to seeing you in person. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. And we'll see you Thursday.
Safe travels.
All right, there he goes, Paul Leffler, the voice of the Fresno State Bulldogs. All right, that's all the time we have for this week on the Colorado State Insider Podcast. And a reminder to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it. Certainly do that. It helps if you can review the podcast. And then, of course, spread the word, all right, to other Ram fans out there that maybe might not have enough CSU talk in their life. Of course, they don't talk it down in Denver on the Denver Sports Talk Show. So a place to come here and listen to Colorado State Athletics Talk. So spread the word to other Ram fans if they don't know about the podcast here. All right, again, big thanks there to the McBride brothers. They joined us at the Steve Adazio Coaches Show on Monday night. We appreciate Trey and Toby. And, of course, Paul Leffler, the voice of the Fresno State Bulldogs. All right, that's going to do it. We'll talk to you again coming up on Thursday night for Bulldog Stadium. Our tailgate show begins at 6 p.m. and the kickoff between the Rams and the Bulldogs starts at 8 Mountain Time across the Colorado State Sports Network. That's going to do it for this edition of the Colorado State Insider Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by The Group. Once again, Brian Roth saying so long, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been the Colorado State Insider with Brian Roth. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Colorado State Sports Network, powered by Canvas Credit Union.